Am I audible?
Good. I'm Doris McCrossin, and from Washington, D.C., and I have the distinct pleasure and privilege of introducing the Honorable Barbara M. Watson, Assistant Secretary for Consular Affairs, the Department of State. Barbara Watson has been with the State Department since 1966 in this capacity, and she left in 1974 and was returned in 1977. Ms. Watson received her academic degree from Barnard College and the New York Law School, where she obtained a Bachelor of Laws degree. And Ms. Watson graduated third in her class. She has an honorary Doctor of Laws degree from the University of Maryland and a Doctor of Humane Letters from St. Mary's College. It is my pleasure to present Ms. Watson, and if she wishes, she can speak in French or Spanish, if anybody so wishes. But please, won't you welcome Dr.
Watson. Thanks very much, Ms. McCrossin. I want to announce right now, if I sound as though I'm speaking in gobbledygook, it's for real. I'm not quite certain where I am right now, on which planet and which continent. And it isn't because I had a big bash last night. It's just because I've just returned from the Far East and my brain is over there, my body is here, and it hasn't quite caught up. But I felt that taking part in this convention was an extremely important one, because it's time that we as women let our voices be heard and stood up and be counted, because the world needs the intense and the magnificent contribution that all women have to offer. I have some very strong feelings about the contribution that women have to make. The world can ill afford the loss of brain power. And look, in this country, we constitute at least 51% of the population. And what are we doing about it? It's true that we have not been permitted to do a great deal about it, but now the opportunities are presenting themselves, and we must grasp this opportunity and go forward. Around the world, when I've traveled, aside from taking care of my particular area of expertise within the Department of State, I've always been asked to speak to women's groups. And interestingly enough, all the women around the world have their eyes centered on us, the American women. I just left Korea, and I spoke with the National Council of Women, dynamic women who were contributing to their society, their members of parliament, their judges, their doctors, their university professors, their heads of universities, and they all wanted me to speak to them about this conference. I think there is a delegate that's coming here to represent Korea, because they feel that you have the dynamism to give them leadership, give them ideas of how better to encourage their women to make the contribution to their society. I have done as best I could to encourage them. I have pointed out the history of our women's movements, how we have had terrific spurts, and then we've gone back three steps. And then we have another minor spurt, we've gone back two steps. And now we've had this great surge, and I'm hoping and praying that we will not go back, because we can't afford it, neither can the world. And probably one of the things that will contribute to the continuation of this great surge is that we're all, I would not say victims, we are all a part and subject to one of the greatest revolutions that has affected mankind. And I contend it's even greater than the Industrial Revolution, and that is the telecommunications revolution. So what happens here will instantly be transmitted around the world. And this impact on peoples around the world will serve to continue to raise the level of expectations and aspirations of women around the world. I was trying to find out what really one wanted me to talk about this morning, and I'd like to make it somewhat informal. First, let me say I can give you some idea of what I'm doing and to show you how long it took us to get where we are, at least within the State Department. In this great and highly sophisticated, most powerful, and the wealthiest country in the world, it took almost 180 years for the State Department, which was founded in 1789, I might remind you, to appoint a woman to a high policy level within the echelons of the State Department. And that person was myself. Now, that served as a sort of double victory in some areas, because I'm not saying that there weren't women in the Department of State, but very often they were viewed as gophers. You know, you go for that and you go for the other. But when it comes to the big decisions, it's only the men who have the great expertise and intelligence to do this. And there were a great many women, but they were on the lower echelons. And then in 1968, President Johnson decided we had to put a stop to this. And I was appointed the rank of Assistant Secretary of State for Consular Affairs, Bureau of Consular Security and Consular Affairs. This was something that was considered unique, because it was not only the first woman, but also the first black who had ever been appointed to so high a rank within the Department of State. Now, when you think of the power of this country, this really should not have been something that was astounding and unique. It should have been, over the years, comme il faut, something that was usual. I must tell you that when I first entered into this position, there were nothing but men, of course, and I'd be the only woman in the staff meetings with the Secretary of State discussing the problems of the world, foreign policy. The men were very gracious, smiling, but there was a great big question mark in their eyes. I was quite aware of this. But soon that question mark disappeared. Because as long as you know who you are and you do your homework, then they will accept you as a colleague. And that's what has happened since then. Since that time, we have three assistant secretaries of state. We have an undersecretary of state for science and technology and security assistance. We have several women ambassadors who are representing our country in various parts of the world. And more you're finding women taking a more active role in the foreign policy decisions of our country. When I came, I decided, well, within my scope, that when there were competent women who had the abilities, I was going to make sure that they had appointments to positions which merited their capabilities. They were then made consul generals and consul of embassies for consul affairs, which made them number three in the embassies. And these were accepted by the Foreign Service, and more particularly, very well accepted by the host countries, because this then was a signal to the rest of the world that America was slowly but surely recognizing that women had something to do and something to offer. Let me tell you about my area. What are consular affairs? Sounds like a very mysterious kind of area, but it isn't, and yet it's an extremely important one. We're in charge of all the consular operations around the world. There are something like 250 posts around the world. And we deal with the lives and aspirations of people, the movement of people. And on reflection, it seems rather unique and right that a woman should be in charge of that kind of operation when you are dealing with people. Because then you have the extra sensitivity of knowing how to deal with so many of the problems which face peoples around the world. Under my bureau, I have charge of something like 4,000 people with an enormous multi-million dollar budget. We have the passport office, which issues all of your passports whenever you decide to go abroad. And I understand, and I know for a fact, that the number of people who are traveling abroad is increasing enormously. We're issuing this year 3 million passports. Next year it'll probably be 3.5-4 million. And especially with the cut rate fares, the Laker fares between Europe and this country, they're charging you $156. You can't afford not to go. So there are many, many more people who are traveling back and forth. There will be certainly, I understand soon, cut rate fares going to the Far East. This impacts on all aspects of our operations. There will be a dramatic increase in the passport issuances. We also have to determine the acquisition or loss of citizenship of those persons who are abroad or born abroad. And there's another aspect of office under my jurisdiction, which is the visa office. And that issues visas to all foreigners who wish to visit this country, whether they come as non-immigrants, visitors, that is, or students, or as immigrants. And in that area, there's a certain part that does deal with refugees. So you can see how all of this impacts on our foreign relations and our foreign policy. And finally, an area which is most important and deals with the problems of Americans who find themselves in trouble abroad. In traveling, gone are the days where you have the highly sophisticated traveler who's accustomed to traveling, knows how to handle themselves, knows their way about. More and more, you're finding people who are traveling, who have not had the experience of going to different cultures and different countries, and who find themselves inevitably either running afoul of the laws of those countries, or falling ill, or getting lost and disappearing, or dying, or having their purses snatched and losing their passports and their monies and so forth. And who do they turn to but the American embassy or consulate? And our people have to be there to serve, to protect their welfare, offer them assistance within the confines of the laws that govern these areas. So you can quite understand that this is rather an enormous job. Presently, we have 2,200 people in jails around the world. Americans are peripatetic. And no matter where I have gone, in any nook and cranny of the world, I have found an American. Now, they're not always in trouble, but they are there. And this is quite a dramatic change, because years ago, Americans confined their travel from one part of this continent to the other. If they were really adventuresome, they might cross the border and go down to Mexico. They might make a trip to the Caribbean, and the really adventuresome people would take a trip and go to Gay Paris or London. But now you're finding them in the Far East, in the Middle East, in Africa, and so forth. I must say that my good friend Alex Haley has contributed to a lot of that travel too. I just about 4 weeks ago was in Dakar, and I was told, do you realize that Dakar, which never had too many Americans visiting, excepting those who were anthropologists or those who are interested in art and culture and so forth, or now every week a plane is disgorging something like 350 people who are over there on a tour for the price of $357 round trip. This includes 7 nights in a hotel, and all these people are looking for their roots. Going over to Banjul. This is not only in Dakar. It's in Ireland, in England, in Germany, in Italy. And believe it or not, it is suddenly exploding into Japan. Somebody's getting married, I see. So, you see, this is a part of the travel explosion. And you're finding that many more people are traveling who are inexperienced. There are a great many younger people who are inexperienced, and a great many older people. We have made an analysis in the passport office that a very large percentage of the older people, something like 60% or more, are over the age of 60, and this was the first time that they ever had a passport. Now, they don't necessarily get reckless, but there is the greater percentage of them who do become ill, or the excitement is too much for them and they die. And our consular officers have to immediately notify the families, and then arrange for the shipment of their remains or for burial wherever they may find themselves. You heard recently of the tragic plane crash in Tenerife in the Canary Islands, where some 540 some odd Americans were killed. The two planes, the KLM and Pan Am. Our consular officers had to immediately move in and make sure of identification of the bodies, preservation of their properties, and notification of the families, and transshipment of whatever was left of the remains. We also had to ship back on an ambulance plane those people who were so severely burned and could be better treated in your burn center here in Texas. These are some of the things that the consular people have to do. As I say, I think it's rather significant that they chose a woman to be involved in these kind of everyday things that deals with the lives and the aspirations of people, no matter where they come from. And more we're finding that the role of the consular operations is impacting more and more on our bilateral relations. They are becoming a very integral part of our foreign policy overall mission, so that we don't necessarily make a flat decision about any relationship with a country solely on a political or an economic basis, but the consular operations necessarily must be factored in to get a complete whole of our operations. One of the most interesting things that have come up recently, as you know, the whole business of freedom to travel. This is a part of the new administration, the concern about human rights, the concern about consumerism. And the reason why our area is even more important than it has in the past is that for the first time, America does not find itself involved in a hot shooting war since World War II. And our stress now is more on persuasion, on dealing with people on a one-to-one basis, and how we interrelate. And who are the best ones to do this other than the consular people who are on the front lines of our foreign policy operations, because they are the ones in the field. They're the only ones, really, that when an American is in trouble or wishes information, he may not be in trouble, just wants to come in and say, I'm going to touch base with my country. It's the consular people that they have to deal with. The foreign, they don't get to see the ambassador, it's the consular people that they see. Foreigners, if they want to come in for information of how to come and visit America or how to immigrate to America, they must deal with the consular operations. And the consular people are the ones who have to be knowledgeable about the customs and the mores of the places where they are posted, and the language. They deal with the local officialdom. In many instances, consular people can go into parts of the country that not even the ambassador can go. Consular people have to be father confessor, mother, nurse, psychologist. I remember one time a man who had been told for years by his good friend, boy, the best place in the world, this is paradise, is Paris. You haven't lived until you get to Paris. And finally this man decided to save up all of his money, and after some years got sufficient money to go to Paris. He arrived in the land of paradise as described by his friend, and when he got there, he finally found his way to the American embassy and was very distressed and upset. Said he wanted to go back home immediately. He had to get him out of here. The consular officer said, I certainly would be happy to help in whichever way you feel is necessary, but what's wrong? Don't you like Paris? He said, Paris is all right. He said, well, what's the problem? He said, they all speak French. I can't understand it, so get me out of here. I'm going back home where everybody can speak proper English. It's that kind of thing, but that's just one of many. And this then means that the true diplomat is the consular officer, because he has to know how to deal with people who are disoriented, who are upset. Very often some people who are very upset will come in raging and be very rude, very nasty, and the one thing you'd like to do is probably give him a punch in the nose, but you can't, because you understand that this is one way of his expressing his frustration, his unhappiness. He does not know how to deal with a problem which is strange. He's in a strange land, strange customs, and strange language. So he flails out and then takes it out on you, because at least you can understand English. Point is, then you have to know how to bite your tongue and say, yes, I understand, and I'll be very happy to help you, and calm them down. So these are some of the things that we in the consular operations do. And it's challenging, it's exhausting, our workload is dramatically increasing. Many, many more people, there are about 7.5 visas that have been issued to come here, are wanting to come here for a number of reasons. One, this is still considered the land of milk and honey, the great land of opportunity. But number two, for those who just want to come and visit, it's still a bargain, believe it or not. Now, we sit up here and talk about how the prices are so high. Wait till you go abroad. They are not to be believed. Tokyo is the most expensive city in the world. In Vienna, which one thinks of only in terms of Johann Strauss and the Danube Waltz, the Viennese waltzes, for those of you who like to imbibe, a martini costs $6 US. This is enough to put you on the wagon. But so therefore they're very delighted to come over to the United States. They get wonderful bargains, they shop, and they go on back home. This then, of course, has increased our workload in terms of the number of visas that we have to issue. The other thing is that many of them are wanting to come over here to study, and in many instances this has been very good for us, because those who do study here get to know the Americans and their way of life and their thinking, and very often many of them have gone back to be leaders of their country, and there is this warm friendship and understanding. There is not the antagonism that many people ordinarily might have. And then, of course, we have another problem, the matter of refugees. The whole movement of people, there are upsetments, political and otherwise, which has impinged on our part of our foreign policy of give me the tired and the weary, etc., within the limits of our capabilities. I don't know that I want to continue to talk about, I could tell you stories from now until doomsday, but one thing I do want to say is that in line with the theme of this whole convention, the role of women, this has been an extremely important area that wherever I have gone, and I find myself in this role of twofers, you know, I'm not only the assistant secretary in a specific area where I have to speak with foreign governments and foreign officials and also chair consular conferences, but then I also ask, well, the women would like to talk to you. Would you address this group, or would you come to this luncheon, and so on? And I feel a responsibility to carry out that role, because I feel very strongly that women have so much to offer. Ms. McCarson mentioned that I was out of a government for 2 years, which in my estimation were wonderful, glorious years in the real world. I was practicing law, and I was lecturing, and I was traveling, and I was my own boss for a change. I could do as I wanted. But it was also a fascinating era because I was able to travel not as an official, but also as a professional, and see some other aspects of the world. Interestingly enough, I was asked to speak to a World Convention of Eminent Women in South Africa. And having been assured that there would be a full representation of the entire society and that there were people coming from around the world, I went. And it was a very interesting experience. There were about 1,000 people there. There were the blacks, the Asians, the coloreds, the Afrikaans and the English, all of them living together under the same roof for 5 days in Grahamstown, which is the town where Rhodes University is. We had